My father was always a Newcastle fan, and I was proud. I was a real Manchester. I became besotted with football, and I was a bit of a star, a little prodigy in my little village. So many failed. They think managing is easy. I was in the manager for 8 years, 8 years. George, I don't think there's been a manager in a game like me. I loved Ipswich and European nights with Porto, Sporting Lisbon, PSV, and obviously Barcelona. I came home and George, I think I did a hell of a job. You know, the North East means a lot to me. Maybe the legacy, which is just as important to me, is that I'm going to try and help people fight cancer. So, you know, I've been lucky.
This is Bobby 90, a four-part podcast series brought to you by The Athletic to mark what would have been Sir Bobby Robson's 90th birthday. My name is George Culkin, and towards the end of his life, I worked with Sir Bobby on his final book. We looked at photographs, stirred memories, turned pages. It took Sir Bobby on a journey, his journey, from his early days as a miner's son in County Durham, through his mazy career in management, back home to Newcastle, and finally as his health declined, leading what he would describe as his last and greatest team, the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation. These recordings, brought to you by kind permission of Sir Bobby's family, have never been heard before. Our final episode. Faced with cancer for the fifth time, the last time, Sir Bobby takes on one more challenge.
I thought I'd ever finish like this, never. I thought I would, you know, live like my dad, 86 years of age, turn around, aneurysm of whatever he had, and he's dead in 2 seconds. I just thought that would happen to me, you know. I never saw myself finishing with ill health or bad health or being disabled, never. I thought I would live a good life, and would eventually die like everybody else does. But I really think the fight that you have to have in football management over the years, you know, to be a man of steel, if you like. Because all managers have that kind of steelness. But I think that ability to fight little mini little mini disappointments or whatever they are, you know, over the years, and fight the fight, and you get knocked out in the semi-final, but the life that I've had to live in football, in a highly competitive, demanding sport, really, has helped me to manufacture the character that I've got, which is whatever faces you, face it. It's like a boxer in the ring gets knocked down, and you can either lie or you get up and throw the next punch. I think to survive, you have to have that. Well done, yeah. Here you are, George. Have a nice biscuit.
You have one as well.
Well, I will do, yeah. I'll have the chilled one with a bit of chocolate on, George.
Right, I know you've told it before, but can you sort of give me the story of how the charity began? Obviously, it was through your own health situation, wasn't it?
Yes, simply that Ruth Plummer, who was the medical oncologist at the hospital and in charge of me, with a fella called Dr. Kelly. She's just actually been made a professor. So she's a bright lass, I think. At the end of one of my chemotherapy sessions, or maybe it was the end of the last one, very sheepishly, and with a bit of embarrassment, said, "Could I talk to you?" I said, "Yeah." And I thought you were going to talk about my health. And she just happened to say that where we are now is a bit old and out of date, but we have a replacement, a facility at the Freeman Hospital, which is beautiful, modern, light, airy, just what we need, 3 times the size of what we've got here, absolutely ideal, but we haven't got a penny to kit it out. Do you know any body with the money. I said, no. But then I said, you know, like, what are you after? She said, well, she told me, we've got to try and kick this cancer trial research centre out. State-of-the-art laboratory, latest techniques and you know, early detection and treatment of cancer, clinical trials for new drugs, that sort of thing. We've got good people in the area who are doing wonderful work, were themselves going round people trying to get some money. Well, I mean, they had full-time jobs, and they didn't really have any contacts, did they? She says, oh, just wonder whether you know anybody, any corporate people, any business people, any individuals who might be willing to hear about our story and our problem and, you know, give some money. So I thought, right, well, I'll go think about it, Ruth. I do know people, but, you know, never thought how I'd work it all out. What was the best way of raising the money? How do we go to people and raise money?
I mean, typically, it's something that you've thrown yourself into. I mean, like,
very much.
Like you have with everything. In your
well, life. Like going to Barcelona, learn a language or going to Newcastle, yeah.
But you've always had that. You've always had that trait, haven't you? It's the same.
Yes.
Thing.
Well, I don't want to boast, but yes.
No. It's not boasting. It's the kind of the love of work, and it's the love of hard work, which obviously you've inherited from your sort of dad and from that side.
Yeah, yeah. And I've done it, George, when I haven't been well, have I? So I put me back into it, George.
Yes.
I'll be one of these guys that, if I'm committed to something, you know, I'm committed to it. Well, once I committed myself to using my name for the foundation, I knew that there could be no slowing down, there could be no pulling out, getting halfway down the road and turning back. I knew there was no turning back. We through this meeting with my committee and all the hospital people in authoritative positions, we got it down to the fact that 500,000 would meet most of the project. George, I went to Sunderland, I forget the match. Towards the end of the season, I think it was Middlesbrough, because I stayed on me. Yeah, it would be. And I was in the back row of the director's box, which saves me, you know, going down steps and coming back again. So Sunderland have been very nice to me. They've been very nice to me. They always put me in the back row, so I don't have to negotiate the steps to going down and coming back. Because going down is a nightmare. I can get back up and do going down in case I fall. And I just turn, and I'm now on the corridor to go along the corridor and turn right and into the director's rooms behind them. And there was two old soldiers there. And as I went by, they said, hey, Bobby. And I said, yeah, how are you? No, here. One give me a £20 note and one give me a tenner.
I mean, in the rest of your sort of life, you've had big challenges. England, Barcelona, Ipswich, Newcastle, etc. Big challenges, but this one that you've done is literally a life and death challenge because you're dealing with people's lives, the people who'll benefit from the charity.
Well, it's like I said, it's not about beating Portsmouth anymore, it's about beating death. So, you know, that's the legacy that I'm hoping to kind of leave, I guess. Several times. I'm the only one in my family that has had it or got it. And it is the fifth time, isn't it? Yeah, it is the fifth time. Here I was, you know, the fittest 70-year-old probably in the country, which I was, I think. And 2 years later, I'm fighting for my life. And it was a blow, wasn't it? It just came out of the blue. I mean, a football match, as you know, Where else would I be on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock? And ironically, at Ipswich, is the first match of the season as the president on the pitch, getting a thunderous ovation. And by 3:15, something's happened to me which I didn't know much about. And by 5:30 that day, I'm told I've got a tumour on the brain, which was a shock. So all of a sudden, from being a Tarzan, which I thought I was, Johnny Weissmuller, swimming from trees and, you know, from being very fit, very strong, on the pitch every day and could run and, you know, good heart, and I've still got that. That's kept me alive, to be honest, I guess. Suddenly I find that I'm... I'm fighting death, which I am. And with the advent of my tumour, the removal of my tumour, my disability through the operation, the continuation of scans after that to make sure that this was all out, they then found out that I had more tumours in my lungs, which were of the same type, malignant, and unfortunately they said this was operable, this one in my lung was operable, these weren't aren't. So I knew I had a fight on my hand. And I went to see him about these other tumours, Dr. Kelly. I realised that he was telling me there was a bleak future. So I said, well, right, how long have I got? And he said, well, nobody knows. Not weeks, of course, but not years. Months. So I said, well, how many months? He said, I don't know. He said, maybe 12, 24, 36. We don't know. So I thought, bloody hell, like, bloody hell. It was a shock, George, to tell, wasn't it? When he said to me, well, not weeks, but not years, months, I mean, he stopped me in my tracks. And I went home to Elsie, she was lying in bed, she was ill, she was actually in bed, wasn't she, really ill. Well, I just told the truth, I just said, no, I just told her that the tumours that I had were not operable, they were inoperable, and I'd have to go have some chemotherapy, and couldn't give me any time or any knowledge as to how long I would survive, but I had to face the future with cancer of the lung. Everybody's afraid of it. It's a frightening word. And there's all types of cancer to all different parts of your body. And my disability is my worst problem. Well, I'm coping with my cancer, yeah. But if I had my arm, if I could play golf, or drive a car, or tie my tie, or tie my shoelace, I wouldn't be so bad. I'd feel the frustration, not the cancer. It's my disability. And so that's been frustrating. If I just had cancer, well, I mean, we're all going to die. I mean, you know, George, I am 75. You know, there was a woman who came to my dinner in Newcastle, very tearful, very emotional, to thank me for what I was doing. And they bought a table to, you know, to put some money into the... And they lost their boy at 15 years of age. You know, George, if I lost my boy at 15 and you lost your daughter, how would you cope? And this woman lost her boy. She was tearful that night. She's very emotional. And the husband was with her and he was bleary-eyed and, you know, and thank you, and, you know, we've come to support you. And Bobby, we lost our son 6 months ago, 15 years of age. So it's a horrific disease. And, you know, and there isn't a person in the world, I don't think, that doesn't know what cancer is. Because everybody knows somebody who's had it. Or their friends had it, or their friend of their friends had it. Or their friend of a friend of their friends had it. We all know who's had cancer. Because the area means a lot to me, you know, it's where I was born and bred, playing my early football and so forth, where we've come back to, where I met my wife, where we got married, went away, but after 50 years I came back. You know, the Northeast means a lot to me. I'm happy to be home, George. It's where I want to be. It's where we are. It's where we will never move from now. I mean, I just think, George, like everything else, with time, and it'll take money as well. That's why I'm doing it. you know, this Ruth Plummer needs money to set up this laboratory, this state-of-the-art laboratory, with all the modern, you know, techniques or whatever they need to discover what drugs are. So I'm convinced, George, that with time and money, we'll conquer it. Might not conquer every particular cancer, but the idea is that, you know, obviously throughout the world, George, wherever, I mean, we're talking about the Northeast, but in America, in Australia, in China, everybody's devoting a lot of time to trying to find out how to cure cancer. And one day we might cure it, I don't know. But it would take time. You know, and so I'm just saying, well, whatever time I've left, I haven't been football life, and I've got a legacy about that. But maybe the legacy, which is just as important to me, is the legacy that I'm going to try and help people fight cancer. Fight on my hands for my life, really, basically, and with my disability and having cancer, I think work was out of the question, or that type of work which I'd been undergoing was out of the question. Hello, and so I just got on with my life. What can you do? So, you know, chemotherapy was the answer, and see what we could do. And they offered me the golden standard cancer drug treatment, and they offered me a new trial drug treatment, didn't they, which didn't work. And the percentage on that new drug wasn't sufficient enough to give me an improvement, and therefore it was pointless given to me. So I went back on the ordinary, what they call golden standard drug, which is the most common one they've got, which has been developed for years and years. They haven't found anything better in the last 30 years than what I'm having. And so I've been going from, you know, week to week. So I said, what will happen to me? How will I know it? They said, well, you get very tired. But the latest scan showed that the tumours, the bigger ones, which were a worry to them, were on hold. They're static. So I'm off chemotherapy, which I must say has made me feel better, hasn't it? But sometimes the treatment is worse than the disease. In fact, George, it's funny, every time I was told that I had a cancer, it didn't kind of knock me over. I didn't think, Christ, oh my, that's the end of me. I'll be dead in 2 weeks' time. I just thought, all right. A match and you've got another match 7 days later. I had to have this lung taken out because I knew that I had another lung anyway, so it wasn't a problem. All my life I've faced, not adversity, but I've faced a disappointment. We'd lose a match, to the end of the world. You got another one 7 days time, you'll win that one. So I think that effect football had on me, of getting over a defeat or a sadness or a blow, you know, has helped me in my private life.
That's interesting.
Well, there's not much else you can do, George. If you don't battle on, you'll die. You'll, by packing in, your life will pack in. So by fighting it, I've extended my life. And the extension I've had in my life has probably been the best part of my life.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, you could never write off Ipswich, because that's where it all began. I was there 14 years. But what I did after Ipswich, you know, I hit the jackpot in terms of England and so forth. But then, without having that, you know, that spirit, that resilience to not ignore it, I did ignore it. I dealt with it. I had to deal with it and fight it. But by doing that, I have extended my life, and I've done some wonderful things. And the last part of my life has been probably been the best part of my life. They think I'm a miracle man, and I remember the time that we make, George, I mean, twice I've had an aneurysm. I've had a blood clot. And the blood clot stopped next to my heart. And twice I survived. And they don't know how I survived. Professor Mendel, who operated on me, the professor who did this operation, came in to see me and said, "You're lucky to be alive. You know, you should be dead. You actually should be dead." I said, "But I'm not." He said, "No, you're not." He said, "But you should be. What's happened to you?" He said, "It's remarkable. We can't believe you're alive. Most people who have what you've just had don't get over it. It kills them. You know, your heart's in your, you're in great, great condition. Thanks to your heart and your active life, it's obviously saved you." I look back, I don't think I've been ill.
No.
I just think I've been lucky. I've lived 2 years, and I said, I've been fit every day of my life. She said, "Bobby, what are you talking about? You've had cancer 5 times. I said, "Oh, have I? Oh, yeah, I have." But like, it never interrupted my work, George. It never interrupted my work. So, you know, I've been lucky. Yeah, I've been lucky.
Sir Bobby Robson launched his foundation in 2008, following his 5th cancer diagnosis, to find more effective ways to detect and treat the disease. Part of Newcastle Hospital's charity, the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, works within the NHS and in partnership with other leading charities and organisations. It funds cutting-edge cancer treatments and innovative cancer support services, including the clinical trials of new drugs at the Sir Bobby Robson Cancer Trials Research Centre. Sir Bobby described his foundation as his last and greatest team. He had no idea how large his team would grow or how much it would go on to achieve. For more information or to donate, please visit sirbobbyrobsonfoundation.org.uk. That's sirbobbyrobsonfoundation.org.uk.
I still remember. Is that the time? 20 past 3. Is that the time?
About 20 past
3. I'll be there for 4,
hasn't it? Yeah. So we should probably...
Yeah, we should really go.
Is that okay to be a bit early?
I've got a pub on the foot. I must have been late.
No. Well,
have we had a good day or not?
Very good.
Right. Yeah. That's excellent.